Hello and welcome to the FT Advisor podcast. The Bank of England is mandated to target a 2% increase in inflation, but since May this year, the rate has sat above that target, and in August it hit 3.2%, the largest increase ever recorded. The bank is now predicting that inflation will go above 4% later this year, potentially reaching its highest level in a decade. But despite this, the central bank believes this rate increase is transitory, and has so far ruled out bringing forward a rise in interest rates, which is the bank's main tool for controlling inflation. So will inflation keep rising? And how does all of this affect financial planning? I'm Sally Hickey, a senior reporter, and with us this week are Michael Copeland, a senior area manager at Wesleyan, and Lawrence Cook, head of UK intermediary distribution at Sanlam. Thank you both for joining us. So first of all, Lawrence, are you able to give us a bit of context as to why inflation is rising?
Yes, thank you, Sally. Well, I think if you look across the globe, the fundamentals of life are showing increasing prices. So whether you look at energy prices, food, shelter, and in the UK, used cars in particular, have shown significant increases. And there's no escape from that. Of course, we've got the increase in the energy price cap coming too. So whilst we might not see a significant jump in September prices, we will probably see a further jump in October. So those fundamentals plus a supply side squeeze means that we can look forward, if that's the right word, to the predictions of inflation probably being correct.
So what are your thoughts on the sort of 6 month outlook for inflation?
Well, I think prediction has made a fool of a lot of people. We didn't expect, did we, to have lowish unemployment, fast growth. We probably expected to have the opposite. So predicting what the inflation rate will be next year is tough. But the BOE has said they think it might peak at 4%. And our investment chief investment officer feels that that's probably within a sensible range of probabilities. The difficulty comes, of course, is even if that is correct, asset prices may react somewhat more violently than we've seen in the past. So that can have an impact on clients' wealth and portfolios, of course.
Yeah. And that brings me very well onto my next question, which is for Michael, which is what impact has this rise in inflation already had on investment portfolios?
It's interesting because it imposes almost kind of a stealth threat to investors because it chips away at real savings and investment returns. And most people who invest tend to aim to increase their kind of the long-term purchasing power, by which, of course, then they have to beat inflation. And inflation puts that goal at risk. Obviously, you know, if you want to keep the real purchasing power, for example, you know, an investment that returns 2% before inflation, you know, if inflation's running at 4%, then inflation has actually therefore given a negative return of minus 2%. So it already is having an impact on clients' portfolios.
Sure. And did this take advisors by surprise? I mean, were they ready for this rise, or have you seen a sort of rush towards inflation proofing clients' portfolios?
I think that depends on the investor, if I'm being honest. I have a saying that it's all about time in the market, not timing the market. And I think some people have been caught out, as Lawrence said. You know, we've had this kind of post-pandemic surge in certain areas, petrol prices, oil, and some really, really left-field things like furniture. The cost of furniture has gone up considerably. Vet bills have gone up considerably. So some of these things are things that we can't avoid. So for me, it's about time in the market, not time in the market. But we have seen this kind of, some people have tried to react to the market and have tried to adjust their portfolio to try and hedge the effect that inflation does have on their portfolios.
And can that then go wrong? Can you time the market? Can you sort of try and catch the falling knife and miss and then have sort of hedged your portfolio incorrectly? Or is it just a case that you've sort of made your portfolio slightly safer than perhaps you had to? Or is it that there's absolutely no time to do anything at the right time, and it's all dependent on the client's needs?
Yeah, it's all about the client's needs, and it's all about their longer term objectives. And for me, to try and correct to chase the market will have a negative effect on your portfolio, and sometimes you just have to ride these things out and let the markets. Almost to just, you know, when the pandemic hit, we saw the stock market fall from a high of around 7.8 down to about 4.8. So, but now, you know, 18 months later, we're back up to a little over 7,000. So sometimes, you know, you can make little tweaks and little adjustments, and, you know, you can keep your eye on things like gilt returns and fixed rate bond returns and stuff. But for me, sometimes you can make minor adjustments, but if we look at what's gone on in America, you know, you could try and chase that market, but who would have seen that growth 18 months ago? So you just need to be quite careful, really, or as you, in your words, you would catch a falling knife.
Sure. And Lawrence, how would you advise advisors to inflation proof their client portfolios? Are there any sort of easy wins that they can advise, or is there anything that they definitely shouldn't be holding given that inflation is probably going to rise in the next few months again?
Well, probably be wary of any knee-jerk responses. I think, and to that extent I agree with much of what Michael has said. I think there are some tactical decisions that can be made, particularly for advisors where they have clients with likely to be a fairly shortish term demand on capital. So if you think you might have a client that originally were a long-term investor, but they're perhaps within 5 years of wanting to crystallize some of their investments, you may want to take a view on some of that, particularly if you're coming up to retirement, whether to actually start crystallizing some of those assets, maybe putting some aside in cash. I know that's what a lot of good financial planners do, because decumulation and the strategy doesn't start on the day you retire. It starts really with the planning leading up to that. So advisors that have a lot of traditional government bonds may want to just think about some of the simple mathematics behind gilt prices. I mean, the US base rate is at 25 basis points right now. So if it were to increase to 1.25%, a 10-year treasury would lose them roughly 10% in capital. So a 10% fall in capital is rather significant in terms of fixed interest for that, for supposedly an asset class that's dampening down volatility. So there's some, I think a lot of advisors have looked to investment managers to provide some sort of hedge against that by reducing duration. And I think that's been important. And on the equity side, if advisors have been chasing a growth-orientated strategy for investment, they might want to have a think about that, because a lot of the price in a growth stock is the discounted future earnings in a company, because they're low divvy payers. And inflation, any inflation will discount the future earnings. So that's likely to have a pretty negative impact on growth stocks. So if you followed a particular investment style, then perhaps that's something to be a little bit wary of.
And do you think we'll see a shift to value as a result of that decreasing kind of power of cash?
Well, at Sanlam, we've been thinking so for a while, and we've possibly been slightly ahead of the curve, but we're not planning on making any knee-jerk reactions, because maybe we're a bit too early. I think... if you're taking a long-term focus on achieving client objectives, then that's the most important thing. I think if most financial planners, and I stress the word planners, not advisors, are focusing on achieving client objectives, not trying to actually make predictions of global macroeconomics, then they will focus on those broad objectives of achieving what a client wants, not trying to second guess where the market's going to be. But listen, there were plenty of managers who called time on government bonds several years ago, and that's a massive bet in itself. So deciding to dispense with a key asset class is a major decision, and one that advisors should think very, very carefully about doing.
Sure. Michael, would you add anything to that on where investors should and shouldn't be looking at the moment?
I absolutely agree with Lawrence. I think the absolutely key for me is the number one priority has to be the client's objectives, and then you model their portfolio around their objectives. So for me, that's absolutely where it needs to be. And certainly at Wesleyan, you know, absolutely fundamental is what's the client's objectives, and then how do we model the portfolio around that, which, as Lawrence said, will include an element of perhaps cash to ensure that the short-term goals can be met. And yes, we understand, you know, cash versus inflation, there's a risk in itself there. But that's the fundamental thing. I think that all advisors and all planners need to have right at the very top of their list really is, does my client's portfolio reflect their objectives? And if not, how do I need to make sure that those two are aligned?
And I can imagine that communicating with clients why you're doing certain things is also really important. And Michael, I'm wondering whether, you know, thinking of the past 18 months and thinking of the emotional roller coaster that everyone's been on with now this rise in inflation that has perhaps been slightly whipped up by the media, I can imagine that's a big part of what is taking up advisors' time in communicating to clients, this is why we're doing this. Because of course, money is such an emotional thing. Is that something that you've seen?
Absolutely. And, you know, Martin Lawrence, who's our director of investments, constantly reminds, you know, all of the financial advisors and financial planners at Wesleyan that we're all about investing in for the long term in the market. We tend to buy and hold stocks because we look at the longer term growth strategy. And I think what's important then is that we communicate that message to our clients and we almost reassure them and calm them down to kind of go, look, we've got this, you know, we're actively looking at your portfolios, we're actively managing your funds. As long as we know what your objectives are, we don't need to knee jerk against this. We're very much looking at the long term strategy in here and giving you, you know, long term sustainable growth. And sometimes it's just about talking to your clients and letting them know what's going on and giving them exposure to people like Martin and then being able to have exposure and access to some of the fund managers just so that we can just allay their fear sometimes, I think is really, really important. I think fundamentally is the way that you communicate with your clients is absolutely vital because, as you said, some will get quite nervous and it's just about reassuring them and calming them down, you know, listening to their concerns, addressing their concerns, and just making sure that they know that you understand what they're trying to achieve and that you're there right alongside them. So I think that's absolutely vital.
Lawrence, is there anything you'd add on that point?
Well, yes, I've perhaps taken a slightly different direction because I would agree with what Michael said. I think advisors can think about the business model that they have. Many are now financial planners, but were financial advisors. So they've gone through a transition of being perhaps measured by how well investments did in a client's portfolio to now whether actually I'm looking after my financial planning objectives. Some have not yet made that journey. And for those that are still thinking about how you move from being judged on whether your investment has returned X percent above a benchmark or not, then I think the lesson over the last year or so is that, you know, those advisors, and I've spoken to many over the last year, that have delivered huge value to their clients by holding their hand, metaphorically, I guess, because it's all been over Zoom, last year to say it's probably going to be okay. Don't sell. Your objectives are likely to be fine. And the value that advisors and planners have delivered to their clients has been huge during that period, huge. And we shouldn't forget that. But I would just urge advisors that if they still think their clients perceive that they're paying their advisor fee for investment returns, then to use this period to reflect upon whether that's really the business model you want in the future.
Yeah. And you mentioned a lesson there for advisors and investors. Are there any other lessons that you think this environment can give to people or, you know, this inflation coming out of nowhere almost? Is there anything else you think we can learn from it?
Yes, I think so. Because I think for many of my colleagues who have probably been, that were born after 1990 odd, probably think low inflation and interest rates have always been like this. And of course they haven't. And I suspect Michael and I are both old enough to remember interest rates and inflation of significantly higher value. And it is a useful reminder not to take it for granted. I was just looking at a Schroeder study actually before we came on this call, and £1,000 in 95, 20 years later, in global equities, adjusted for inflation, is £2,608. An average of savings accounts would be £859. So let's not forget that. And that was over a period of relatively benign inflation. And if we get back to anything like the normal inflation that Michael and I maybe have experienced in most of our lives, then we need to be very mindful of making sure we try and protect clients' long-term interests. And that means ensuring that we overcome the devil of inflation.
Michael, is there anything you'd add to that? Any other lessons that...
I'm just smiling quite wryly because I do remember the day that mortgage interest rates jumped up to pretty much 15% and thinking, cracky, that's quite a lot. But it very much goes back to the point I was making early, Sally, really. And it backs up Lawrence's point perfectly. For me, it's time in the market. You know, that pound you put away, or that £100 you put away, you know, back in the 90s is now worth so much more if you've just taken the time to ride the ups and downs of the market and just held your nerve. And I think, you know, as long as people, as long as our clients have got a really good understanding of kind of their appetite for loss and what their attitude to risk is, then, you know, very much just allow it to play out. Stay calm, listen to your financial advisors. As I said, Wesleyan very much adopt a buy and hold strategy, very much long-term sustainable growth rather than try and chase the market and chase any dips. So that's key for me.
Great. And it's interesting. I can imagine that the wealth of experience that both of you have, it would be so helpful because having seen previous market, you know, cycles and shocks and scares, the first one is most likely always the worst. And after you've seen two or three, you start to think, well, yes, this is not great. But through history, it's all, everything always rights itself and it's never as big as a catastrophe as it feels like. So just to have that strength of character to say, don't sell everything on the worst day, because, you know, you'll then crystallize those returns and that's, you'll crystallize your losses and that, but that's what your sort of inherent choice would be. But I can imagine after a couple of market cycles, you then go, actually, you have to go exactly against your initial thoughts and you have to hold and just ride it out.
Yeah. Sorry, Lawrence, I was going to say it's almost counterintuitive, isn't it? But that's absolutely right. A loss is only ever a loss if you crystallize it. So as long as you don't crystallize that loss, then history has shown that the market will always right itself. Absolutely.
Yeah, and I think in practice, I would encourage financial planners to focus on using stochastic probability-based cash flow tools rather than deterministic, because what these probability-based tools do is help the advisor educate and demonstrate to the clients the probability of particular outcomes rather than saying, in absolute terms, this will happen or that will happen. And it helps to educate and bring the client inside the financial plan and take responsibility for their decisions too. So the more advisors can do that and show historic trends in investment and inflation, the better they will prepare their clients for future shocks in the market.
Mm. And I guess that also gives clients a sense of more control. I guess the worst thing is a client seeing the markets be really jittery and thinking they've completely lost control, whereas the more you know about it, I can imagine the more it will relax them and that this is a choice that they've made. It's not something that's happening to them.
Yeah, that's right. And I think it's been quoted for about 20 years that the average age of a financial advisor is 55. I don't know why it's sticking at 55. You'd thought it might get older, but it means therefore that many financial advisors have quite a lot of experience and have been through several such cycles, and I think the value in helping clients not to make rash decisions is not to be underestimated, that's for sure.
And Lawrence, if this period of inflation does indeed turn out to be transitory, does that mean that advisors should adopt a different approach than if it was likely to last, or will that, is it the same approach to each situation?
I think very much the latter. It's the same approach, trying to guess, in effect, guess the market, and guess macroeconomics has always proven to be quite a high risk strategy. You might get it right. And then the worst thing that can possibly happen then is that you think you're smart, and then you try and predict it again. It's a bit like the chap who flips a coin 10 times and happens to guess it right. Thinks he's actually got a good strategy. He was just lucky. So let's not try be lucky fools. Let's try and be sensible planners.
Sure. You're nodding, Michael. Do you? Is that something you'd disagree with?
Absolutely agree. I couldn't agree more, to be fair. I think, you know, if we try and guess the market, if we try and time the market, if we do try to be clever, that's usually when it comes and bites us on the backside. And for me, should we adopt a different approach? No, because history has shown that the market will correct itself. You will, over the longer term, outstrip inflation. You'll get above inflationary growth. You'll get good returns. So there's no need to change the approach, Sally.
Sure. And I guess the ultimate issue with inflation is that even if it hits 0.5% next month, you know, you're still, the purchasing power has still decreased, and that won't change.
Absolutely. Yeah, that will never change. So you know, if we've got an approach worked and has worked to give us growth that's better than inflation, why change?
Fab. Well, that's a great note to end on. We're sadly running out of time, but Michael and Lawrence, thank you very much for joining us and for your comments. And thank you for listening. We'll be back next week.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
The latest episode of The Next Five podcast is out now, and it's all about AI and creativity. I speak to Doug Eck, Senior Research Director at Google DeepMind.
Creativity is part and parcel of humanity.
YouTube creator Danny Vidari.
AI can give us humans new ideas.
And Neil Maiden, Professor of Digital Creativity at City University London.
AI creates a lot of opportunities. I think it's a great leveler.
Listen to the full episode of The Next Five wherever you get your podcasts. Enjoy.